right. Let's move into agenda then. Item three, we're going to be brief now on the 2030 plus study, Hong Kong 2030 plus study. This is a very important piece of work. I leave you to make your own take your own views and thoughts, but I think it's in some ways it's very aspirational and very brave. I suspect the challenge is around delivery, but let's hear what the planning department have to say and what they want to share with us today. We've got Amy Cheung, who's going to, I think, do the briefing, and we've got Stephen Siu as well to join us. So, Amy, over to you. We've got people putting hands up about declaring interest. Sorry, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I want to declare a conflict of interest. My husband is working with the planning department, but more importantly, he's directly involved in Hong Kong 2030 plus. So I'll refrain from making comments on this.
Okay, fine. All right. Okay, that's fine. But please stay, because obviously it's a very important study. Yes. All right. Anybody else declaring interest? No. Thank you. Fine. Amy, take us off. Take us on then. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. As many members may already know, we've just launched the public engagement for our 2030 plus study a short while ago. This is a very long-term study looking into the long-term future and embraces a very wide array of issues, many of which may be of interest to the Commission here. So we take this opportunity and we cherish this opportunity to come here to share with you our findings and our recommendations. I'll now pass to Stephen, who would briefly go through what we have here.
Thank you, Chairman. The Planning Department will now present to the Commission the background and key proposals of the Hong Kong 2030 Plus towards a planning vision and strategy transcending 2030 study, or Hong Kong 2030 Plus for short. Hong Kong 2030 Plus is built upon the foundations of Hong Kong 2030, promulgated in 2007. The meaning of the plus sign signifies that the study's planning horizon will transcend the year 2030, whilst enhancing our spatial development strategy and responding to changes and challenges in the future. The study adopts a proactive, pragmatic, action-oriented, and vision-driven approach to ensure a focused public dialogue on the key planning issues critical to the future development of Hong Kong. The planning engagement of the study commenced on the 27th of October and will last until the end of April next year. The study is scheduled for completion by 2018. On an international level, Hong Kong is a highly competitive global city, but our performance in terms of livability and innovation remains relatively moderate. Some global megatrends, such as climate change, technological development, and the shifting of economic power to the east, will impact on the future development of Hong Kong. In the regional context, Hong Kong is situated at a strategic regional gateway in the Greater Pearl River Delta region. We are well positioned to capitalize on the opportunities brought about by the completion of major regional infrastructures in the coming years, as well as the free trade zones in the vicinity and the Belt and Road Initiative. At a local level, Hong Kong is facing considerable challenges and opportunities, especially the double aging of our population and building stock, increasing land demand, the current imbalance in home job distribution, and growing public aspirations for enhancing livability. Hong Kong 2030 Plus envisions Hong Kong to become a livable, competitive, and sustainable Asia's world city. Its proposals mainly comprise of three building blocks, namely planning for a livable high-density city, embracing new economic challenges and opportunities, and lastly, creating capacity for sustainable growth. Each building block contains various key strategic directions and actions, which are then translated into a proposed conceptual spatial framework. Planning for a livable high-density city is the foremost building block of Hong Kong 2030 Plus. The overall approach is to retrofit the densely developed urban areas and to optimize the new development areas. We strive to enhance livability through 8 city attributes, making Hong Kong a compact, integrated, unique, diverse and vibrant, healthy and an inclusive and supportive city. We should also leverage on Hong Kong's extensive green and blue assets, provide shared public spaces for public enjoyment, and to maintain and rejuvenate the aging urban fabric. Through these strategic directions, we aim to address 4 key issues that are relevant to Hong Kong. The first key issue is our aging population. According to the latest projections, in approximately 30 years' time, 1 out of every 3 people in Hong Kong will be an elderly aged 65 or above. The proportion of the old, in other words, persons aged 85 or above, will rise significantly from the current 2% to over 10% by 2064. In response to this aging phenomenon, we need to promote elderly-friendly planning and design concepts, respond to the housing, healthcare, community and social welfare services needs of the elderly, and to further promote aging in place. The second key issue is also to do with aging, but in the context of our aging building stock. We estimate that in 30 years' time, the number of private housing units aged 70 or above will reach approximately 330,000 units, which is a growth of nearly 300 times from today's numbers. In this regard, apart from stepping up repairs and maintenance, we also need to strengthen urban regeneration efforts and policies to rejuvenate the urban fabric. The third major issue is the aspiration to enhance our living space, including home space, open space, and public facilities. Apart from a review on public space in Hong Kong, we also recommend adopting a higher ratio in planning the land requirements for GIC users and open space to enhance our living space. For the provision standard of open space, this will be raised to not less than 2.5 meters square per person, while the provision standard for GIC facility will be set at 3.5 meters square per person. The fourth major issue is to leverage our extensive green and blue assets. By adopting a compact, high-density development model, Hong Kong has retained a vast amount of natural assets and green and blue assets, such as Victoria Harbour, our country parks, natural rivers and streams, etc. To optimize the green and blue assets, we propose to establish a conceptual green and blue space network through integrated planning, for instance, by introducing eco-corridors, better land-water interfaces, and other green and blue infrastructures. The second building block of Hong Kong 2030 Plus is embracing new economic challenges and opportunities. The overall approach is to move Hong Kong up the value chain, diversify the economic base, and provide more jobs requiring a range of skills. In terms of the key strategic direction, we need to ensure the timely provision of adequate land and supporting infrastructure. At the same time, we need to ensure the availability of sufficient and suitable talents, and to promote innovation and technology as drivers of future economic growth. Being a service economy, most of our economic activities are clustered around Victoria Harbour. At the moment, over 3/4 of all our jobs are concentrated in the metro areas. A key objective of Hong Kong 2030 Plus is to create a more balanced distribution of homes and jobs by creating new economic nodes outside the metro area in order to bring jobs closer to homes. The third building block of Hong Kong 2030 Plus is creating capacity for sustainable growth. The target is to create capacity in 2 ways, namely to create development capacity and to enhance our environmental capacity. The purpose of creating capacity is to avoid our strategic land and infrastructure planning work from being persistently subject to insufficient land supply constraints. However, the implementation of individual developments or infrastructure projects will continue to follow existing established mechanisms, and the new approach will not result in problems of overplanning. As part of the Hong Kong 2030 Plus review, we have also assessed the long-term demand and supply of land in Hong Kong. The total new land requirement will be over 4,800 hectares. having discounted about 3,600 hectares from the committed and planned projects. The outstanding requirement will be at least 1,200 hectares. To meet this shortfall, we recommend developing two new strategic growth areas, including the East Lantau Metropolis, or ELM for short, and New Territories North, or NTN for short. In terms of supporting transport and other infrastructure, as part of our sustainability principles, we must first manage and reduce their respective demands. For instance, through minimizing the distance between homes and jobs, we can minimize and reshape travel needs and patterns. At the same time, railways should continue to be the backbone of the public transportation system in Hong Kong. The effective and efficient operation of our city also relies on an integrated, smart, green, and resilient infrastructure system. The crux of this approach is to minimize pollution, emissions, the demand for resources, and land take of infrastructures. For the environment, we will proactively create, enhance, and regenerate the existing environmental capacity in two ways, namely biodiversity enhancement and environmental improvement. Biodiversity enhancement includes protecting areas of high ecological value, revitalizing water bodies and abandoned farmlands, etc. While environmental improvement includes measures such as district cooling systems, reusing treated sewage effluent, and utilizing waste-to-energy technologies. The three building blocks discussed earlier are translated into spatial planning terms to form our proposed conceptual spatial framework. It has taken into account various considerations, including ballpark estimates of the land requirements, distribution of committed developments and infrastructure, the distribution of areas of high ecological value and environmentally sensitive areas, and the existing spatial distribution of homes and jobs. Whilst we have an outstanding land requirement of over 1,200 hectares, there aren't many suitable choices for identifying such vast areas of land that could be used for comprehensive development, which would allow for the application of smart, green, and resilient concepts, and taking into account all the considerations above. Our proposed conceptual spatial framework, therefore, includes one metropolitan business core, two strategic growth areas, and three primary axes supported by a transport network. The metropolitan business core mainly covers three areas around Victoria Harbour, including the traditional CBD on both sides of the harbour, Kowloon East as our CBD 2, and the proposed CBD 3, which is located at Kau Yee Chau and forms part of the proposed ELM strategic growth area. Functionally, the three CBDs could complement one another, reinforcing Hong Kong's status as a global financial and professional services center. The two strategic growth areas are ELM and NTN. The basic concept of ELM is to create artificial islands by reclamation in the waters that are less ecologically sensitive near Kau Yee Chau and Heilongjiang Typhoon Shelter, and making better use of the underutilized land in Mui Wah, thereby creating a new metro front. Having considered the local constraints and development opportunities, the initial development area will be about 1,000 hectares, with a population of about 400,000 to 700,000, and employment of about 200,000. The NTN preliminary development concept is based on the comprehensive planning and more efficient use of brownfield sites and abandoned agricultural land. The NTN would provide land for building new communities and developing modern industries and industries preferring a boundary location, while improving the living environment of the existing area. A new generation new town could be developed at the Heng Yuen Wei, Ping Che, Da Gu Lang, Hong Long Hang, Queens Hill area, together with two potential development areas at Sun Tin, Lok Ma Chau, and Man Gam Do. The initial development area will be about 720 hectares. Depending on the eventual development scale, the population will be about 255,000 or 350,000, and total employment of about 215,000. It is especially worth mentioning that both strategic growth areas will focus on the scale of population and economic activities. They will help address the existing imbalance in the spatial distribution of homes and jobs. The three primary axes are to the west, east, and north. The Western Economic Corridor will capitalize on the strategic transport infrastructure and international and regional gateway in West Hong Kong and the various developments in the Hung Shui Kiu New Development Area, Tuen Mun, and North Lantau. The Eastern Technology and Innovation Corridor will leverage on the existing cluster of high-tech industries and tertiary institutions. It is possible to further develop knowledge and technology-related facilities at Cheung Kuan O, Ma Liu Shui, Lok Ma Chau Loop, and the future Lin Tong Heng Yun Wei boundary control point. The Northern Economic Belt comprises six existing boundary crossings and the Lian Tang Heng Yun Wei boundary control point under construction. This belt also includes developments in the NTN. There are relevant areas which are suitable for warehousing, research and development, modern logistics, and other emerging industries, thereby creating a new employment center in the northern part of the new territories. This plan shows the proposed supporting transport network for our framework. It includes a transport corridor connecting Northwest New Territories, Lantau, and the metro area. Subject to transport need and detailed study, this proposed transport corridor may be extended northward to Shenzhen West for further connectivity between Hong Kong and our neighbor. This corridor also provides an alternative access to the airport, North Lantau, and the Northwest New Territories, thereby strengthening the resilience of our infrastructure system. As for NTN, a proposed north-south transport corridor from Northeast New Territories to Kowloon is proposed, but this would depend on the eventual scale of the NTN development. The maximum housing capacity of all developments under the proposed conceptual spatial framework is about 9 million in terms of population. However, it must be stressed that this figure is not a population target, but the possible housing capacity under the vision and proposals of Hong Kong 2030 Plus, subject to a series of assumptions. Such a capacity could give a 10% buffer for the peak population, which is projected to reach 8.22 million by 2043, based on the latest baseline projections. The buffer could be translated into maneuvering space for improving our quality of living and raising our ability to cope with future changes. This slide shows the highlights of Hong Kong 2030 Plus. In terms of our capacity for sustainable growth, as we can see on the left-hand side, whilst the built-up areas will be increased, the protected and preserved terrestrial and marine environments will also be increased. In terms of enhancing livability, we will optimize our new development areas and retrofit the densely developed urban areas. By increasing the proportion of jobs in the non-metro area by 50%, a more balanced spatial distribution of homes and jobs would emerge, thereby contributing to the livability of our city. As for the economy, we can see from the center of the slide that our economic capacity is set to be increased. For instance, Grade A office floor space will increase by over 55%, while the floor area for market-driven industries and special industries will increase by over 45%. Lastly, all the key strategic planning directions and actions will take place under a smart, green, and resilient city strategy that will permeate all levels, aspects, and stages of the planning and development process. To ensure that the proposals could be carried forward to timely actions, we propose to set up a high-level steering structure within the government for coordinating, prioritizing, and monitoring relevant initiatives amongst the relevant bureaus and departments based on the overall strategic framework of Hong Kong 2030+. In terms of public engagement, we will host a series of engagement activities for Hong Kong 2030+ up to the end of April next year. These include briefings, sharing sessions, forums, focus group discussions, workshops, guided tours and exhibitions, etc. We welcome the Commission's views on Hong Kong 2030 Plus. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you. As I said, visionary, brave, and I think what many of us have been looking for in terms of a clear strategy, if you like, in terms of taking things forward in the future. Obviously, I think Planning Department would welcome general comments, but I think so far as you can we keep them water or harbour related? It would help a little, but I appreciate that members may have views on other aspects of the study, so please, if you wish to record them, do so. A couple of thoughts from me. What I suggest we do is we'll take the comments collectively and then you can respond collectively in a minute. The car. You didn't touch upon the car at all in your presentation, but it is mentioned in the report, and the possibility that if we continue at our 3% growth rate at the moment, we'll have over 1 million cars in Hong Kong by the time, by 2030 plus. You weren't here earlier when we were talking about the challenge we face with parking on the waterfront. But to me, the car's the enemy, so far as the harbour is concerned anyway. And I would like to see, and maybe you can respond, a much more proactive approach to reducing car ownership, not accepting it's going to increase, but much more aggressive approach to reducing car ownership, focus on enhancing the public transport infrastructure, look at sharing, autonomous vehicles. I mean, the world's changing dramatically, and we should be capitalising on that, I think, from a transport perspective. But you might want to talk just a bit about cars in a minute. Secondly, I think if you're going to deliver this ambitious program, then in parallel, we have to look at our regulatory and our framework, if you like, and the framework against which we try and make decisions today. The regulatory and the legislative framework, building regs, planning regs, etc., all very prescriptive, and very difficult to deliver an ambitious program, I think, like this, unless you have major reform of the way we submit, approve, and deal with these sort of applications. So, comment about the possible reform of regulatory framework in parallel with the study. So those are my two points. I'd like you to pick up in a minute. Members, reaction, comment to the study? Who would like to go first? Paul, I see your hand up.
One question. What is the impact on the waterfront of these plans for the Victoria Harbour waterfront? This is the Harbourfront Commission, and it would be nice to hear from government any comments in relationship to the Victoria Harbour waterfront. If these strategic growth areas are going to be implemented, the transport infrastructure related to these strategic growth area, how will they impact the Victoria Harbour waterfront, but also how would they impact Victoria Harbour in terms of risk of reclamation? I support the chairman's comment that the traffic and transport is not really well dealt with, and I'm for the same reasons as the chairman concerned about the what we're going to do with all these vehicles that are going to come across the border. We're building a vehicular capacity cross border, which takes up. Takes up the vehicle trips per day to about 220,000. The current vehicle trips is about 45,000. So there's a potentially enormous amount of growth. It's either vehicles from across the border that come across, but it will also definitely increase the incentive for people to own vehicles in Hong Kong, because instead of going, you know, being limited to traffic between Sham Shui Po and Hong Kong Island, we can suddenly travel to Dongguan and Foshan and other places, so the ownership of vehicles, the advance of that goes up dramatically with this capacity. But I don't see a solution for it. I don't see any plans for it. I don't see any comments on how to deal with that. And then my third point, Chairman, I refer to page 31. Page 31 of the digest says public engagement, the large book. On page 31, indicated are the accessible waterfronts and the possible waterfront linkages. And I noticed specifically that the linkage between West Kowloon and the along the Yamate Typhoon Shelter is missing as a possible waterfront linkage. Is that, does that mean that the government hasn't told us yet that they are not thinking that this is possible, or they will not pursue it? Is this, have you made a choice, but we don't know about it? It's been discussed at length many times here, and we're a bit hoping that you'll actually be actively working on it, but I noticed that the dots are missing from this map, so I hope you could clarify what government's intentions are in terms of the implementation. Chairman, I have many other comments on the on the study, but I don't think that we this is the appropriate forum.
Thank you very much. Let's try and stick to the harbour and the waterfront if we can. Anybody else wish to comment? Several of us have been at engagement sessions already, and we've had one or several goes. Peter, did I see your hand?
Very briefly, yes. I think to me it's a strategic study, which is fine. I mean, we can't be commenting on really too much to do with development. We all know the problems we have with land availability. What concerns me is that there's very little in the study really about the city itself in terms of livability, walkability, connectiveness. After all said and done, 50% of people in Hong Kong, 50% of the entire population actually live in the city, in what we call the urban area. 70% of people work in the urban area. There's very little in the report about regenerating the city. There's virtually nothing about the harbourfront in terms of meeting the 7 to 8 harbourfront objectives that we ourselves have in front of us all the time when we're evaluating submissions. And finally, I'd also echo the chairman's comment really about the fact that our regulatory environment and even our well-known policy silos in government are very often working against the very objectives that we that are set and that we are really trying to accept and live with in terms of our harbourfront. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to comment? Wow, planning department, you're getting up lightly today.
Thank you.
All right, Amy, off you go. People may want to think and have a second go. Okay, off
you
go.
Thank you, Chairman. Maybe I'll answer the question about car ownership and car growth first. In Stephen's presentation, we clearly mentioned about the problem, and actually, in terms of the solution, we are looking forward to, firstly, we will hang on to our overall concept for a rail-based development strategy, supplemented by suitable environmentally friendly transport modes. I think this is one of the way to at least encourage people to use our public transport. Although we know that Hong Kong people do use a lot of the public transport already, but that 10% of private vehicle usage actually gives a lot of burden to our existing roads, and we are under pressure to build new roads because of that. So curbing the growth of cars is clearly a direction that we're looking towards. And it's not only that direction, it's also about usage of the road. It's not only about ownership, but it's also about how we can curb the usage of private cars as well. So going for a public transport-based land use plan is one of our direction to ensure that people will actually not use that much of private cars. But certainly another way of putting it is that we are proposing decentralizing our jobs and making sure that people, the jobs and the places of homes are actually located in a shorter distance apart, so that the need for taking long trips to work will be reduced, and that's how that's another way of making sure that people will not use that much of our of private cars. So there are lots of ways of doing it, and I'm sure that we do need to coordinate with the traffic policies and transport policies in taking forward our future plan. Secondly, about regulations, this is a very long-term strategic plan for Hong Kong. We're setting out the issues that we're facing, not only for Hong Kong, but we're taking a very global and regional view of all the aspects that are related to our future development. So we know that there are a lot of policies and regulations that we do need to consider reviewing in taking forward our strategy. And I think we're setting out at least in the right direction first. And then we know that we have to coordinate the other aspects to ensure that our strategy will be taken forward in an effective manner. And this is exactly why that we are proposing a high-level steering structure within government to take forward the initiatives of the Hong Kong 2030+. And hopefully that will make things go faster and more effectively. Third thing about harbourfront, livability, as we emphasize, is one of the key aspects that we're looking at in our Hong Kong 2030+ strategy. And one of the attributes which was mentioned in the PowerPoint just now was to ensure that we have a unique and vibrant and characteristic city. And one very major character of Hong Kong is our Victoria Harbour. So we do embrace all the principles that have been proposed by the Commission, and we do need to ensure that in taking forward our all these principles, there are specific aspects that we need to look further into, including ensuring a continuous harbourfront, good accessibility to the waterfront, and making sure that our harbourfront is vibrant and something that the people of Hong Kong would love to go to. So all these will be the overall umbrella for us to think further into, and we certainly have to work further on the details. The specific question about connectivity between Yau Ma Tei and Tsim Sha Tsui, on page 31 of the booklet. There are small prints that you may not be able to read, but I can read it out for you. It says that these are just initial proposals. Let me see, I find it difficult to read. Okay, the small print says that these are indicative and they are just existing and potential enhancement items. Further investigation will be required to identify the exact enhancement items. So these are just initial proposals, and of course if members will suggest something more, we are happy to add to the plan. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think the simple answer is we'd like the dots to go all around the harbour.
Okay.
So just blue dots all the way around the harbour, please, because certainly that's our ambition, people to the water and along the water. So in terms of 2030+, we would hope by then that we have access, continuous access along the waterfront.
Mm, thank you.
Freddie, please, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I just would like to follow up on one point you mentioned about you would endeavor to work on curbing the increase in private car ownership and in control of the use of land resources by roads. I just want to point out that you probably also need to look at not just private cars, but also public transportation in terms of buses. Because you probably know that KMB has planned to change the fleet of buses to a newer model, which is almost a meter longer for the carriage, and that means it's actually going to have a larger turning radius, slower turning at road junctions, and it occupies more space whenever it comes into and out of the bus stops. That actually slows all the traffic on the road. I don't know if there is any mechanism to control the increase in size in the double-decker buses. I understand the justification for this change was probably environmentally driven because it's better performed in terms of environmental considerations and emissions and things like that. But just bear in mind, you also need to look into that, not just on the private cars.
Any other comments, members? Paul, please.
Yeah, that's it's interesting the comments that Planning Department just makes about the transport and traffic, and referring to the fact that the Transport Department has yet to be involved in this study in a comprehensive manner. That's somewhat of a shocking revelation. If I look here at the chart on my computer produced by the government, the road length is increasing dramatically in the new territories, which brings more vehicles quicker to the waterfront in the older urban areas. And we see the admission here that we have an enormous increase in new boundary crossings. Hong Kong is going to go from a closed to an open environment in terms of vehicles. And there's no addressing of this issue. And it all of that going to add pressure to Hong Kong Island and Kowloon, the older urban areas, which is where the waterfronts are. And this is also where a Transport Department has put the road. So it's a significant issue. And so where's the land reserved for parking? Where's the land reserved for park and walk? Where's the land reserved for park and ride? Where's the land reserved for parking at the cross boundary? Is everybody just going to come in? The last statement from Transport Department is that we cannot stop the cars at the boundary because it would defeat the purpose from having border crossings. And so from a Transport Department point of view, all the vehicles that are coming across the boundary should be free to traffic into the older urban areas. That's the current policy. The last statements in Transport has been publicly made about this. So I really miss this component, Chairman, and one reason for me to be late, even on my motorbike, I was stuck in all of that traffic just now. So I just find it amazing that it's not in here, Chairman. So again, reiterate your point. Freddie's bus length point, great, you picked it up, Freddie. We've asked for bus lengths to be limited on various roads in the Southern District because of exactly the same reasons. The longer the buses, the more traffic jams we're going to have, and the shorter the buses, we might have more buses, but shorter buses are more flexible given our tight turning radius on our various Hong Kong roads. So, again, why the Transport Department would allow that, and 2030 doesn't talk about it. And in terms of the waterfront connectivity, I noticed that my proposed waterfront extension as a district councillor in Phok Phalam is included in the plan, but not the waterfront extension at Yau Ma Tei, which has been discussed since 2004, and my district councillorship only started in 2010. So I'm not sure why Phok Phalam would have priority over an improvement at a harbour front. But it's indicative, Chairman, again, about the disrespect that I feel that government has sometimes to the work of this committee since 2004. Things that have been discussed here are just not picked up in the territorial plans. And that to me is, again, even such a little thing as the dots missing is an indicative of a failure within government to follow through on the discussions here. And I don't know how many hours we've spent here all together as a group and how many free hours government got from us. And I'm not sure whether we can put a number on it money-wise, but I find it shocking. Thank you.
Quick one, Peter. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, following on from Paul, I agree. I think Amy's comment about curbing the uses of private cars, which inevitably leads to more concrete, is very well taken. But it's also an example of exactly what we're talking about. As planners, we're really saying that Hong Kong is not big enough to accommodate so many road vehicles. It has the highest number of vehicles per kilometre of road space of any city in the world. We do need, I think, to examine bus routes as well, not just bus sizes, but bus routes. Fleets of empty buses I see every day going right along Hennessy Road through Core Central to go through the Western Tunnel. Do we need all these buses? They're clogging up the roads. They're creating a nuisance. On the other hand, we have to ask why, given the statements, we've had a 30% increase in private vehicle licenses over the past 10 years. So, you know, it comes back to this old thing. What we're saying we actually need in terms of planning, urban design, good environment in the city is being compromised through what? Through the fact that different government departments are not working off the same palette. Hong Kong 2030 is not just a planning study. It's supposed to represent, I assume anyway, a holistic overview, taking into account urban growth, traffic regeneration, and transport. I think Amy said that you have not gone into detail in the study, which I think I can see. Mies van der Rohe is famous for saying God is in the details, and I think at the detailed stage, these are things that we do have to resolve. I think making proposals without the ability to reconcile so many important constraints are not proposals at all. They're actually just wishful thinking.
Thank you. Right, Amy, do you want just to respond quickly? I think most of the comments are takeaways for you to think about and feed into your future work. Yep. Thank you.
Totally agree. but just to clarify one point, we do have a lot of collaboration with our fellow departments and bureaus in the course of going through this Hong Kong 2030 plus study. We've had numerous meetings with them, and we do have taken on board all their existing and proposed initiatives into our strategic context, including THB's and TD's initiatives. So it's not that it's totally wrong to say that we have not talked with them and not taken on board their suggestions. And second thing about road space that Freddie raised, actually I've heard a totally opposite viewpoint in saying that cars are actually getting smaller in size. If we plan roads on the basis of the smaller, the smart cars, we can actually save a lot of road space. But certainly, Freddie's got a point there in saying that we do need to make sure that the standards for our future roads will cater for the longer buses and the future vehicles that we're looking at. And a holistic view, of course, we do need to have a holistic view. And this is, as I said, a beginning. And we do need to look into a lot more detail. And I totally agree that the devil is in the detail. So yes, we do need to work hard on the details.
Thank you very much. Raymond, do you want to say anything as Director of Planning, as a champion of the study?
Yeah. Well, just a few more sort of supplements to the responses given by Amy. I guess this is a sort of a strategic level plan. At this particular scale, I don't think we can get into sort of too much of the details. In terms of the traffic, I guess what 2030 plus, one of the sort of proposal that is advocating is to have a better job and work, living space, home and job balance. And if we can sort of reverse that in a sort of a more strategic level, and we will be able to turn around with the flow of the traffic, and that would help to a great extent to the overall traffic plan in Hong Kong. The second point I would like to sort of supplement is regarding the regulatory regime, Mr. Chairman, as you have already pointed out. And this is an issue I think that we need to tackle. For any regulatory regime, I think we are balancing between certainty and flexibility. We are always sort of doing this sort of a balance. And I don't think sort of any good design would be able to come out from strict restrictions. And I think later on there's another item that we're going to discuss today in terms of the Kai Tech, and that's exactly how we are trying to promote better design, and at the same time we're trying to set a good regulatory regime to provide certainty and allow flexibility for innovative design. Thirdly, I would like to sort of supplement is regarding the section of the waterfront near Yau Ma Tei. And I guess our waterfront sort of functions are diverse. And that particular section of our waterfront in the harbour is a sort of a fronting onto a typhoon shelter, and that's also one of the public cargo working area. We have a working harbour, and different sections of the harbour have different functions. For that particular section of the harbour, it's a matter of how we can maintaining the function of that working harbour, and at the same time, providing some sort of improvement, promoting public access to the waterfront, and how to improve them in terms of the design. I guess this was the direction that we should be going for. Mr. Chairman, those were just the 3 points that I would like to supplement to Amy's responses.
Thank you, Raymond. Thank you. All right, I think we'll draw a line here. Amy, take away what you've heard. Particularly traffic is obviously an issue. We should be reducing numbers, not tolerating increase. I think also we need to be, I think as a commission, we need to be kept up to date on how you're progressing. I mean, I think you're going to engage for the next few months. I think the engagement goes on, and what, until the end of March?
April.
End of April. All right, even longer. Okay. I certainly think we want you back as soon as you finish that engagement to brief us on the major responses you've had from the community. So okay. I think we need to build that into our programme. I think members have picked this up indirectly. There's nothing specific in the study about the harbour. I mean, you touch on it, you mention it as being an important component, etc. One of the takeaways I'd like you to think about is there something that some messaging, if you like, that you could include in the study in regard to government's long-term ambitions for the harbour and the waterfront? Because there's nothing, apart from dots on the plan, if you like, we haven't got a great deal else. And I think when you come back next time, I think we would like to hear from you with some specific ideas on what is your strategy, or what is the government strategy in terms of the waterfront and the harbour, and how you see putting the whole of the jigsaw together in a sensible and a cohesive way. So I think bring that back next time if you can, something specific on the waterfront and the harbour, because it is such an important part of the character and the reputation of Hong Kong. So please, thank you.
To add one point, is that because our study covers so many different aspects, we don't have time to go through today. But actually, we have a series of topical papers which are on the website, including this one called Planning and Urban Design for a Livable High-Density City. Actually, there is a session with in this paper talking about the how we could plan for a better harbourfront. So we do have information on regarding the harbourfront. So it's not in the booklet. It's not that fully described in the booklet, but we do have this paper on the web.
Can you help us, give us the title of the paper?
Planning and Urban Design for a Livable High-Density City.
It's on the web.
It's on the web.
Okay. Right, so I'm going to ask Chris, if you can send it to Christine, or Christine can access it, and we'll circulate it to members.
Okay, yeah.
And then we can, urge members to comment specifically on that, that paper, and we can let you have those comments as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.